Welcome to the Bioelectronics Podcast by NeuroCore. I'm your host, Rick Rowan, and this is where we can hear about how bioelectronics is changing healthcare and providing benefits to both patients and healthcare systems worldwide.
Welcome to this episode of the Bioelectronics Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Rowan. This episode, we are joined by my regular co-host, Dr. James Somaru, and our special guest, NeuroCore Chief Commercial Officer, Clinical Markets, Jonathan Penny. Welcome both.
Hello.
Hi.
James, Jonathan's area of expertise is probably closer to you than I am. And one of the reasons that we engaged with Jonathan was his expertise within clinical markets, something that was on the target for NeuroCore, but we hadn't necessarily had that expertise up until now in how to approach, how to address, look at those markets. I mean, we'd skirted around the peripherals of it. We were, pushing ground up demand, as in we were going to the doctors through the patients, which was working well, but certainly not from a scalable perspective. But you, I'm assuming in your years, wearing the coat that, sorry, I had to get that in. Jonathan's position, within commercial and sales into clinicians, you would have met, I'm going to say the likes of Jonathan, I don't want to pigeonhole you, Jonathan, but, you would have come across this type of approach before.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, 100%. I can remember when I was an anaesthetist and having, having them now in post-COVID, the traveling sales reps that will turn up and tell you all about a product or all about a new drug and some lovely laminated graphs of how amazing and wonderful it is. Yeah, funny time, but yeah, no, we did. And, I was always keen on innovation, right? So I would always give these people the genuine time of day, and I would always be very, very interested in potential improvements to the department, potential effect on patients and things like that. So yeah, it's a role I'm familiar with. Not overly familiar. I mean, it happened a few times, I think, as an anaesthetist, but I was always genuinely interested. So it'd be good to hear from you, Jonathan, all about your background and stuff.
Yeah, great. So I sort of answered for Jonathan. I didn't give you an opportunity to introduce yourself and tell us about the role. I jumped straight in, Jonathan. My apologies.
It's all good. Yeah, so thanks for the intro and thanks for having me on the podcast. As Rick said, I'm the Chief Commercial Officer for kind of medical and clinical markets at NeuroCore. And what does that mean? That's a good question. It's certainly a meaty title. I'd probably say that the kind of aim, as Rick kind of mentioned, is for us to kind of break into medical markets. And how do we do that? And my background, I've been in medical devices for 16, 17 years. I've sold pretty much most things you could sell into a hospital. I started off selling kind of high volume disposables, plastic tubes, central lines, PICC lines, needle-free devices, cannulas. So it was a really, eye-opening introduction into the medical world. I didn't realize at the time there was anything like a rep that went in and sold the products. I just thought that doctors had products and they, they used them. So it was really eye-opening to go into that. And I kind of fell into the sales side of it. And it was really good grounding because I got to go into various areas of the hospital and got to see a lot of different things. And it kind of, they gave us very good training. And then from there, it was just kind of looking to see the areas that interested me most. I went into radiology. There's a lot of interventional radiologists taking off at that time. That was really exciting, with the stents and AAA, the AAA kind of operations that were going on all through the femoral artery. And it was really exciting to be part of that. I had exposure into cardiac surgery as well. And then from there, I moved to, it was my first experience moving into a startup company, which was in the orthopedic space. They were doing synthetic bone graft. And that gave me a real eye opener into, moving from a reasonably big company to a small startup where things were fast moving. It was just a lot more energy and I loved it. Unfortunately, that didn't last so long because we got bought, as what happens. We got, within 18 months, we were bought out by one of the big companies. And then at that time, I was kind of seeing how it was going with the big company, but it wasn't really what I wanted to be a part of. You're just a number there. It's just not really what I was interested. I kind of liked the challenge of, wearing very various hats, you know, just kind of having that challenge. And then at that time, I got approached by my old boss, who had just started doing some work with a company in the chronic pain space. The product was just about to be launched, so I got in right at the start. You know, I was the first commercial person to be employed, and helped set up that business, you know, from the ground up. I started off as a BDM into chronic pain, which I, again, it was an area I had no knowledge of, and it was...
Was that in the spinal cord stimulation?
Yes, yeah, so spinal cord stimulators.
And so you came in there, it was pre-revenue, right? Was it already in market or was it about to go into market?
We were just about to go to market. We were doing a clinical study at the time. We had the CE mark, but they were doing the clinical study, and we were maybe 4 months into that, but we hadn't any commercial sales at that point. My first commercial sale actually was a private case that I did just in December 2010, and I got handed a check by the patient for the device, which I was like, oh, what's going on here?
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so that was our first case commercially. And then from there, we kind of built out the business. I was based in the UK and I kind of built out that team to start with. But yeah, I was a business development manager. So I was in cases all day, every day. We were still learning about the product itself. It worked differently to how the other products were in the market. The surgery and everything and the implantation was all the same, but actually the workings of the device were different. So there was quite a lot of education and, you know, skepticism from the clinicians, quite rightly so. You know, you had something new coming into the market. Not everyone was, you know, they're careful about it. And so, yeah, that went really well. We kind of we had our CE mark first, and then we did our pivotal trial for FDA approval. But that didn't come for sort of 4 or 5 years after we'd launched in Europe and Australia. So the US were playing a bit of catch up. So we had we were the first to be using it. Usually you have US companies that come to Europe and already have everything, and they just give you all the US peripherals and everything and think, oh, it's just the same market, it's fine, you'll be able to sell it all using our stuff. But we did it the other way around, which is really quite nice. You know, we were breaking ground there. And so I moved into various roles with that company through, you know, managing the UK, and then I went into Western Europe and set up distribution markets and managed those and looked at new markets, and then took over the overall sales for Europe. And then internationally was the kind of final job I was doing with them. So yeah, it's been an interesting ride, and I've seen a lot of different things. And, you know, kind of going through a process with a company like that from zero revenue to, I think by the time we left, you know, that kind of life there, we were up at about $64 million in the international market. So it was a quite exciting place to be.
And just for some of the layperson audience, the product or the technology was specifically for the chronic pain market, and it was an invasive technology.
Yes. Yeah. So ultimately, your standard patient you would get in that would have a spinal cord stimulator is somebody that's had probably multiple back surgeries. They've not managed to solve the pain that the person's had, so they've maybe stabilized it with fusions, and then once, you know, they've kind of not managed to solve it there, the patient then gets passed pretty much to pain departments, and in there you have anesthesiologists mostly that will perform, you know, they're interventionalists, so they will perform a surgery where they will insert leads into the spinal cord, and those leads are attached to a battery, and that's sending a signal up the spinal cord. But there's still a lot of work to be done as to how these devices work. They've been around for a long time. There's a few theories out there, but there's no definitive answer as to what is happening. But yeah, it was all invasive. So having worked in the invasive world and then coming to NeuroCore and working in the non-invasive, it's quite a different view for me. And it was probably something that it took a little bit of getting used to be honest. You know, selling something for 10 years that, you know, it worked very well, and there was a lot of success, but the non-invasive products on the market at the time were probably not something that were, you know, that great, to be honest.
Jonathan, can I ask you about potential impact here? And one of the reasons that I got involved in this podcast at all is just because I think bioelectronics is interesting to me. It's interesting to me because, frankly, I'd looked at, well, obviously, I mean, I was part of pain clinics and things as an anesthetic trainee, and I think pain has always been an interest for me. I think particularly when I saw invasive spinal cord stimulators as well. You know, the use of electricity to actually cure chronic pain conditions in people. And, you know, hearing what Neuracore were trying to do with bioelectronics non-invasively, for me, it sort of triggers that thing of like, well, if you can go from naught to 64 million in sales with something invasive and, you know, price point and all the rest of it around this, but non-invasively, the market size for those that can tolerate and accept and have a device goes up massively. It just the amount of people that can be affected goes up massively, right? So that's where the interest lay for me in this. My question for you is that similar for you? Where's the interest for you? Because going from invasive to non-invasive, I'm just interested in your take there in terms of why Neuracore, why bioelectronics, why non-invasive bioelectronics? Is it something to do with going from invasive to non-invasive?
That's a good question. And yeah, there's probably quite a long answer to that. I mean, ultimately, I think when you look specifically at chronic pain, it's giving tools to the clinicians to help the patients manage their pain. There is no silver bullet that's going to work and solve everyone's underlying pain issue. But if we can innovate and give more tools to allow the patients to manage that pain, I think that's kind of where we need to get to. And I think there is the idea that there will be one silver bullet that will solve everyone's issues, but there isn't. The biggest thing when you meet a chronic pain patient, they want to get off the drugs, ultimately. Every single patient I ever sat down with, you kind of ask them, well, what would be success for you? And they're like, if I could reduce my opioids, get off my drugs, because they're just, and you know, manage my pain that way without them. So moving from an invasive to non-invasive, yeah, it's been difficult, because having success with an invasive product and really, you know, seeing the patients coming back and having, you know, pretty much pain-free in some cases, you know, you've changed their life. And being able to do that with a non-invasive device, I probably at the time didn't think it would be possible, you know, because there are devices on the market that are substandard that don't really provide that coverage or help someone in any particular way. And almost there is that snake oil salesman type element to those kind of devices. So, yeah, I mean, I think what attracted me, especially to Neuracore, I mean, I've worked with some amazing people in my time. I've been very fortunate. And Rick properly sold the vision to me of what he was trying to do with Neuracore. And that really excited me. I think the products we have in the market now are just breaking the ice as to what, you know, is coming down the track. And if we can do what we've done with the current products, the next generation products will completely blow the market open. And again, yeah, I mean, I think looking at those chronic pain patients and being able to treat them, I think we are not going to solve their problem, but we will help them manage their pain. We've proven that, and we are successful at that. The issue that we have from a clinical point of view is getting acceptance for an external device from the clinicians. And that's a big job, and that's something that I'm very much up for, and we're going to do it, but it will take a bit of time.
So that's interesting to me as well, how you finish that, because sales to clinicians, it's a fascinating topic, because I think, I can remember being a clinician, and you're so, you don't want to be convinced of anything. You just want to see the evidence and make your own mind up. And so that's just my take on it, very, very personal view, although I have witnessed that in others. Talk about sales to clinicians for me. That's a really interesting topic for me. I mean, what is it that's going to do the trick here? You know, 0 to 64 million for an implantable device. That's a heck of a track record. I mean, how did you do it then, and how are you going to do it now? Don't give away too much.
No pressure.
I suppose this is a little bit of a leg up there, Jonathan. An example, our chief medical officer in pain and neuromodulation, Dr. Shetty, you knew him previously, right? Because he was prolific. He's a surgeon and a prolific advocate in the past of that technology because it worked. And he has, you know, he has become an advocate for non-invasive neuromodulation because he's been at the coalface and sort of seeing firsthand and understanding it. And he has obviously helped us, or I'm assuming helping Jonathan, in understanding how we correlate that change, if you like, or paradigm shift within that clinical world assisted, because Jonathan's come straight out of that same invasive market into non-invasive. And I think patient results that we see, customer results, patient results we still see on a day-to-day basis really does drive and motivate the team. And I think everyone, including yourself, Jonathan, at times, you know, what some of the life-changing results that people report for us is still like, wow, that's, you know, that's amazing and that's fantastic. And, you know, it's quite a proud moment, I think, for the team every time we get one. So to all of our customers out there, please keep telling us about it. But it was actually at Jonathan was the one who sort of was the driver behind saying, well, you know, we should really collect some data from our patients, from our customers. Let's ask them to report what the results were, the outcome and the data points. And it was Jonathan that drove that, because I think he wanted, or should I say needed, some of that data and validation, you know, to help him along the way in his communication with clinicians, with the clinical market.
I actually first met Dr. Shetty. He was a pain fellow in this is one of the big hospitals we worked with, guys in St. Thomas's. He was a pain fellow there, and that was one of my biggest accounts. And I always spent a lot of time in there. And it's great validation for us to be able to get someone like him on board. But I would say there are, you know, trying to crack into that market, especially from an interventional point of view, it will be tough for us. And kind of Rick touched on it. You know, how are we going to do that? I mean, I think in the past we were my last company were very clinically focused. We did a lot of studies. We actually drove the whole neuromodulation field forward in the research and development we were doing. You kind of looked at how many RCTs were in that space beforehand. There was one, maybe two. By the time, you know, 10 years was done, there's a whole host of them, and all the companies are driving forward to produce more evidence and data and high level data. And that's what's needed, because there is loads of data out there and studies out there on external mod, but there is the quality of some of those studies is not great. And that's something that we as a company are kind of going to try and help drive forward. And if we start doing it, others will start to follow. And that can only be good outcome for ultimately the patient at the end of the day. So selling into that field is tough. And James, you've been a doctor before, you know, I mean, like you get, you probably had a lot of people knocking on your door trying to sell you stuff. And it's who do I speak to and why do I want to speak to them? Yeah, I have relationships and I know known some of those guys for a long time, but it's, you know, you got to go with something. And clinical data is a very good place to start. And when we get more funding, we'll be able to do more high level studies. But at this point, we're kind of starting at a level, as Rick said, we've done the consumer survey. We're doing a service evaluation in the life science hub down in Wales with one of the NHS hospitals down there, where we're taking a group of patients with osteoarthritis of the knee, and they're on a waiting list. And as you know, the waiting lists are going through the roof just now. And what we're doing there is just trying to help control and manage their pain whilst they're waiting for their total knee reconstruction. And, you know, there will hopefully that study's coming. Well, the evaluation is coming to an end this month. So we'll be able to share some of those results in the next couple of months. But yeah, the feedback's been really, really positive from that. And that's kind of where we'll start. And then it gives us a very good view as to how our product's been used, what's working, what's not working. And we can then change up, you know, being a kind of a very mobile company, we're able to do that. We're not set in stone as to what we have. And if some things are working really well, we optimize that. If not, we can change those around as well. So there's a lot of learnings that you get from these kind of evaluations and studies. And we will continually take that feedback and help produce better products in the future. But yeah, it's a long road, especially in the clinical world, to get that validation and to get that acceptance. But it's something we will work hard to do.
I mean, on the agility part, an example of that is when we were approached by the medical distribution or medical device distribution company in the US for the chronic pain market. So they saw there was a specific need or fit for our technology. They liked the brand, they liked the company, and they purchased. So we were able to produce a derivative of our consumer product within regulatory framework, specifically for that chronic pain market. Now, it's taken us a little bit longer than we had expected, but as is Neurocore's track record, we've come up with something that over-delivers as far as we're concerned on the results on the patient side, which is for us the most important. And that is just now starting to get traction. So I'll let maybe Jonathan talk about that a bit. But, you know, we made in consultation with our clinical team, also with Ash Shetty and, you know, the markets that it was being developed for, we made some changes to that product to better fit that prescription chronic pain market. Our distributor over there is currently doing some testing. I won't give all of it away. I'll let Jonathan talk about the areas that they're moving into. But, you know, we're also recruiting, or they are recruiting, you know, a large team of ground sales force to specifically go into those markets. To Jonathan's previous job in Europe at scale in the US. I'll let you unpack that a little bit further, Jonathan.
Yeah, so it's quite an exciting time, you know, in terms of the US. So we're kind of hopefully, we are actually now testing with one group in the West Coast, and they have quite in-depth relationships in the VA hospitals and also pain clinics. So they've taken the products in there. They've already been quite successful there with the physical therapists and some of the orthopedic surgeons. And so that initial testing has been really quite strong for us. We've had good take up, and yeah, ultimately we're using them as kind of a test bed for us then to make sure we have all the kind of support needs and collaterals that they have, and any iron out all those questions. And then the rollout will happen probably quite fast, you know, across the states. We'll, you know, be looking for, you know, upwards of 300 reps on the ground selling specifically into that kind of pain, chronic pain clinics, physical therapists. So yeah, I mean, it's very exciting. I mean, that's, when you look at the US, it's a different animal compared to what Europe is, and it being a private market, it has its advantages as well. There is, you know, it's a lot easier to probably push these products into those areas and get success quickly. Whereas, you know, kind of from a European point of view with public health, there are a few more barriers for us to kind of overcome, but the US will give us, you know, ultimately I'm looking to that to also help create more data for us. We'll be able to collect more patient information as to what's happening and start building more and more evidence and data towards what we're actually doing.
It's nice to hear someone in your team talking about going from 0 to 300 boots on the ground in the US. Mm-hmm. How does that make you feel hearing something like that? Because Neurocore was just a twinkle in your eye at some stage. So to now be at a point where we're talking about 300 reps on the ground in the US selling this product, creating all of that impact, everything that you're getting, you know, you talk about these results from Life Science Hub Wales, and you're talking about the results, you know, everybody waiting for knee replacements, getting pain relief, all of that stuff. You think about the impact that's about to have and the fact that it is landing and you are having these positive conversations. I mean, how is it for you hearing all of this now when you sit and reflect on perhaps episode one and where we were then, you know?
Well, it's a bit disappointing because Jonathan said 300 when it's actually 500, but 300 is the first.
I said we're starting with 300.
You did. I tend not to, when I say get too excited, I don't mean that in a negative way. It is really good to see that we are making progress. And I think like any business, any startup for that matter, you always want things faster. You always want more. You know, things always take longer. They always cost more. You know, we had through COVID and the chip shortages and manufacturing delays, you know, we were 6 months behind in delivering actual product into the US. We were probably a little bit ambitious given everything that was going on, but, you know, we tend to fight on regardless. And at the end, you know, the timing ended up suiting perfectly. You know, there was a lot of groundwork we had to do to get into that US market. You know, we had to engage some specialists with regards to insurance and pay or reimbursement. You know, we had to come up with a reimbursement pathway. So we did all of that groundwork. So the foundations that we've laid there is, I think, very, very solid. But back to your question, the way that my mind works is I see an end and then we have to backfill it or fill it, if you like, to get there. So I see it as sort of a line item marked off or a completion point, rather than sort of not knowing and just sort of everything's a new surprise. It's more satisfaction and, you know, being happy that we've completed that area. And then look, it's not completely clear as into what all those areas are, only that they contribute to getting to that end vision. And the end vision is that we believe that bioelectronics, electroceuticals, and in our case, at this point anyway, non-invasive, don't mean to be too contentious there, you know, is the next phase, the future of healthcare. You know, it fits in with wearability, it fits in with digital medicine, it fits in with, you know, technology in ways that other interventions or, you know, other solutions or therapeutics can't. Not at this point. I mean, I'm sure they will in the, or may potentially in the future. But part of the challenge for us, as Jonathan has alluded to, is the education or re-education, if you like, because it's coming full circle. You know, we've gone from, you know, early versions of bioelectronics through to the proliferation of the pharmaceutical era back to, you know, an age or era whereby bioelectronics and electroceuticals now makes a complete sense by way of fit. And the thing is, it is a new area in some regards by way of sector, because it is underdeveloped and I believe in a lot of areas under discovered. And, you know, the results that we're having prove that. You know, why haven't these results been available in the past? Well, it just hasn't been developed. And this part of it is very exciting, the fact that we're getting this traction and we're able to help more people and we're able to, you know, both scale and improve distribution, you know, with what is essentially at this point still an MVP, still a first-gen minimum viable product that's punching well above its weight. I mean, that is very, very exciting.
Yeah, it's classic startup founder stuff, isn't it? That initial ruthless optimism in the face of adversity versus the also crushing realism of it's just another box ticked on the way to the big vision. It's yeah, yeah, classic founder stuff, but yeah, I know the feeling so well.
Probably a bit out of time on this episode. We might pick up for a part two, maybe talk a little bit more in depth about, you know, how those clinical markets are addressed and some of the future strategies in a part two, if you both open to it. But I'll, you know, I just want to thank you both for this episode. Thanks, Jonathan, for joining us. Thanks, James, again for your usual support and expertise in hosting a podcast.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening to the Bioelectronics Podcast by NeuroCore and for making it to the end of this episode. If you enjoyed it, remember to subscribe, rate us, and leave a review. We'd much appreciate it. And you can head to the description of this episode to follow us on all of our socials so you don't miss out on any of the latest bioelectronic content.